There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Wonderful to have your company this good morning. It is a Sunday morning, start of a brand new week here on Dubai Eye 103.8, and asking you to get in touch with the show. How do you do that? You text us now on 4001. You can give us a call at any point you wish. Just let us know if you would like to share some of the stories. 04871 5500. I'll repeat that one for you because it is a new number. It's 04871 5500. Equally, if you'd like to have your say online, you can do so at Dubai Eye 103.8 FM, hashtag Dubai Eye 103.8. So basically, there's no excuse for you not to share your thoughts on the stories of our two paper reviewers, but equally your stories as well. Throw those into the mix, please, as we get all the latest from you. You're listening to Dubai Eye 103.8. It is The Agenda with you through until midday.
Get involved and help set the agenda. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
So who's in the house? Well, as you heard, we've got Sonal with us here throughout proceedings. Nice weekend for you.
It was wonderful. How was yours?
Yeah, not too bad. Thank you very much indeed. I survived. The family have deserted me. They've left me yet again. They've headed back to the UK for their summer, and they've left me here to fend for myself.
How's that going so far?
Love it. Absolutely love it. But it is a miracle that I made my 10 o'clock alarm call this morning. So, no, it's lovely. It's been lovely. Let's get some. Are you doing that? Are you in a similar position? Has your partner, your wife, your husband taken the kids away and left you to fend for yourself? If so, how on earth do you cope? How do you survive? What do you do? What's the first thing you do when you drop them off at the airport and make your way back to the house? What is the first thing you do? Text us now on 4001. We've got the general manager of Shamal Communications in the house with us. James Lakey is with us this morning. James, lovely to see you again, my friend.
Thank you. Lovely to see you.
Good
morning.
Good weekend for you.
Very nice. Yeah, I enjoyed. I got to Steaky this weekend.
Nice.
At the Steigenberger Hotel in Business Bay. So, yeah, lovely. Really
I've not
nice.
Been down there yet. Nice.
Hotel was lovely. Yeah. Really good. Really good. Nice restaurants, nice pool. Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it.
It's quite nice, isn't it? I did something similar. I could say because the wife's not listening, because, you know, I did dress it up as work or something like that. But it was that, you know, they've gone away, so what am I going to do? So I took myself off to the Palm. Went up to the Palm, stayed at the Waldorf up on the Palm. Very nice. And it was lovely. It was really nice. Yeah. Just sort of getting away a bit, seeing a new part of town as well, from a different perspective. Feeling a bit guilty about leaving the dogs back at home, but I'm sure they're fine. You know, I left a big bowl of food and some water, so they should be okay. We also got Suresha Rai with us here as well. She's nodding on with intent as well, because she is the senior online editor, Hotelier Middle East. She's hearing James and I talking about hotels around town. Do both of those meet with your approval?
I love them. Yeah, they're very good, especially the restaurant options at both the hotels. So it's a good place to spend the weekend for sure.
Yeah, I mean, just on that one. And it's not often that I make recommendations, but the Vietnamese at the Waldorf is extraordinary. If you like your Vietnamese food,
nice.
Get yourself up there, Lao. They grow a lot of their ingredients in the property itself. Okay. So they've got a lot of the herbs and spices from very locally. All the staff hail from Laos and Vietnam as well. So it was a good experience. Very nice indeed. Anyway. Enough of the advertisements. Let's get on with what's going on. In fact, a bit more of the advertisements, because Shamal Communications, tell me more. What do you do?
Shamal, we're predominantly a B2B PR agency. We work across a range of different sectors, such as real estate, construction, security, FM, leisure and hospitality. Been in the region now coming up 15 years, so yeah, very well established. And yeah, things seem to be going okay.
And Hotelier Middle East does exactly what it says on the tin?
Definitely. We're a B2B magazine for all things hospitality news, so you know where to find us.
Busy times for the food and beverage industry. They will be looking to cash in one final time this evening because it is the FIFA World Cup a little later on. It's interesting talking to a lot of F&B managers at the beginning of the tournament, and they were nervous. They needed certain teams to go deep into the tournament in order to meet their summer budgets as well. Do you think it's been a success for a lot of the properties?
Definitely. From our conversations with F&B managers, they have had an increase in footfall to the extent that summer is actually looking amazing for them. And, you know, they went in with no expectations, but have come out, you know, just singing praises about the World Cup because they've just been so happy with the community has really come out and supported F&B businesses in Dubai during the World Cup. So they're very happy. Profits are up and footfall is up, which is always great.
It's been an interesting one for me, James, because I looked at it, you know, and there was all that sort of bad feeling at the beginning of the summer. Costs were going through the roof. Prices were up. There was that sense of anticipation and concern amongst hoteliers and food and beverage. But I suppose it takes something like a World Cup to really bring people together. And I've always been fascinated by the different nationalities coming out to back their own. Maybe not be football fans, but it really does sort of drive to that national pride element.
Oh, for sure. And I think if you look at F&B, I think probably a lot of F&B managers have been delighted that England have got so far. Yeah. I think that's really helped. Speaking to a couple of the guys that do run some of the F&B outlets, they were really wanting England to do well. They have done well. They got to the semi-finals. So I think Sirachi and I, we've been out a couple of times to watch the football together, and it's always been incredibly busy wherever we've been. Regardless of what game it is, people are just out, they're enjoying it, they're having a good time. It only happens every 4 years, so I think people really have got involved. And given that we live in Dubai, there's so many expats here, it's a real opportunity for everyone to come together, which I'm sure F&B managers are delighted with.
Everyone's got their favourite viewing spot. A lot of properties have gone to town with their respective fan zones. They've got one more game to deliver, and it is the World Cup final a little later on. 7 o'clock this evening, so a nice, reasonable time as well on a school night for you. Where are you watching the game? And just how early are you leaving work today as well? What excuse have you told the boss? Where will you be watching the game? Where is the best fan experience and fan zone in town? Share your thoughts with us now on 4001. We will get to some of our local stories with James and Sirachi in just a few moments' time. Quick one, though, just before we go to that, because I know it's something we could dedicate 2 hours to, because it seems to be a fascination with the media at the moment, for good reason, I get it. A certain Donald Trump touched down in the United Kingdom over the weekend, and, I mean, look, I don't have extraordinary amounts of sympathy for the man. I don't agree with everything he's doing. At the same time, I don't disagree with everything he's doing as well. Would I go to Trafalgar Square to protest what he's doing? Probably not. At the same time, this fascination with every single move he makes, it's made for some enthralling TV with the 24-hour coverage of every single move he makes. Have you been watching any of it, James?
Yeah, it's just been amazing. Some of the protocols that he seems to have missed, particularly with the Queen. I mean, I think it was Gary Lineker that put up quite an interesting post on Instagram,
right, wasn't it?
Describing it as a football move, shadowing in behind him, then coming out to the right. So it was quite amusing. But I similar to you, Tom, to be honest with you, I don't agree with everything he does. I think a lot of the times when he says something, it's ridiculous. But then again, yeah, there is a certain amount of sympathy. Sirachi and I were just talking about that.
I mean, but think about it. This is a world leader who has roused such strong emotions in citizens of a visiting country. They don't even vote for him. Mm. They're not his, you know, they haven't voted for him. He doesn't have any policies that affect, you know, the British apart from foreign policy. But here is this completely different country other than the States that has come out in protest for him. So he's roused some very strong emotions regardless of, you know, being across the pond. So that, I think that's quite surprising.
Yeah, I want to get on to more of this a little later on in the show, because it is just one that I found fascinating. And I felt a little bit of sympathy for the man, especially with the visit. You know, you could see anyone meeting the Queen, because of the protocol that goes into it, because of all the build-up and everything like that, you know that it's going to be, they're going to be nerves, whoever you are, yeah. Even if you're as thick-skinned as Donald Trump is. And the fact that he was like 3 minutes late and they made a complete hoo-ha about that, and the fact that he forgot to bow, and then all this sort of walking in front and everything, I felt a little bit sorry for him, yeah. As well. I don't think he was doing anything on purpose. I think it was just nerves. It's like meeting your mother-in-law.
Yeah, true, true. And the other thing is, I mean, he's the most powerful man in the world. And I do feel certain sympathy that if it had been vice versa, okay, yeah. The Queen isn't as outgoing and mad on Twitter as what Donald Trump is. But had it been the other way around, I'm sure a lot of people from the UK would have been up in arms about the way their monarch had been treated. I know he's not the monarch, but I just think it's interesting. Yeah, well, yeah.
He'd King like to, Trump, isn't
yeah,
he?
King Trump, indeed.
We'll have more from the team in just a few moments, not just on that one, but also local news as well. But just as we go to a break, as his UK visit draws to a close, the US president's preparing for his meeting with Vladimir Putin next. Donald Trump will hold talks with the Russian president in Finland tomorrow. Over the past few days, he's met Theresa May and the Queen and played golf at his Scottish resort. Rallies for and against his visit have also been held in cities across the country, including in Edinburgh.
We don't like his politics. We don't want his politics here.
Well, we all make choices in life, and he's making choices that aren't good for people. They're not good for people.
I disagree with everything he's doing. And as far as I'm concerned, he's not welcome in this country.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. On The Agenda with Tom Urquhart, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Where you're watching the FIFA World Cup final, we'll give you some ideas and some options a little later on in the show. But if you'd like to tell us where the best fan experience is, then please do text your thoughts to us on 4001. Also, how have you read Donald Trump's visit to the United Kingdom over the last couple of days? And also the media coverage of it. Has it been balanced and fair? Your thoughts, please, on 4001. Let's get to the papers now. As I said, we've got two paper reviewers with us this morning. The GM of Shamal Communications, James Lakey, and Siraksha Rai, the senior online editor of Hotelier Middle East, are both with us here in studio. And James, going to start with you, if we can. A fair weather story here in the region because it affects so many people. Rent in Dubai, which way is it going, north or south?
It certainly appears to be going south at the moment, and it has been for quite some time now as well. I think we've seen over the last 12 to 18 months that rent certainly appears to be going down. And I don't think it's just restricted to one area. We're seeing drops across the whole board, certainly in Dubai, according to some of the latest reports from the real estate agencies such as Chesterton's or Knight Frank. I think what we have seen in the past is places like the Greens, for example, which has probably held its own very well. It's been a popular area. People have looked to rent there. Even places like that now are seeing declines, and not just by 1 or 2%. They're sort of dropping by 4 or 5%, which is meaning that there's deals out there for people. I know myself, I've just recently taken on a new lease at my apartment, and I was able to negotiate relatively easy to get a discount, to increase the number of checks that I'm now paying as well. So there are bargains out there. It is something, as you say, that impacts a lot of people. But it's not only the rents. I think we're seeing sales as well, particularly from an apartment perspective. Sales are going down. People are perhaps now thinking, if we're going to buy, let's have a look into this and let's see if we can afford to actually buy. If you're here for the long haul or looking to stay for a number of years, then now is probably the time. If you have some money, have a deposit, it's now perhaps time to see if you can invest. So rents are going down, but perhaps that might impact sales, and we'll see an increase in sales.
It's interesting. It makes really interesting reading. As you mentioned, Chesterton's and Knight Frank both are releasing their latest research. The Dubai thing, I think a lot of people would expect. Abu Dhabi, though, is interesting. The fact that we're seeing property prices decline there, according to Knight Frank's new Global Residential Cities Index, Q1 2018, tracking the movement in average residential prices across cities worldwide, revealed that Abu Dhabi property values fell by the most globally. So there is an opportunity in the market.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think what we're going to have to see is the government there looking to invest. I know they've got plans to put certain things in place where there will be money available. There's investment from big companies like ADNOC in terms of oil. They're going to be investing a lot. So perhaps that will change. That's not going to be a short-term fix, however. That's going to be something that's going to happen over a period of time. However, yeah, there are bargains there to be had. I think what developers are looking at is the mid-market, people that are actively looking to invest, and they're offering them a range of discounts. There's, I think properties are perhaps a little smaller, so they're not paying as much for them. And there's a number of options from for investors as well there. So payment plans, for example. I think all of these things should help, but it's just when that dip will finally finish and we'll start to see an up curve again. Who knows?
I want to defer to the greater knowledge of our listeners this morning as well. I want to know what's happening in Surat and Seattle. The reason for the random question is I'm just reading in between these Global Residential Cities Index figures. The Indian city of Surat is leading the rankings at the moment in terms of price increase. They've seen a 22% rise over the last 12-month period due to its inordinately low base in 2017. But what's causing the drive for people buying up property in Surat and prices going so high there? And the same in Seattle as well, 12.9% continuing to lead the 15 US cities tracked by the index. What's happening in both of those cities? If you've got any knowledge on that, let me know. Surat actually might have some ideas.
Surat is a city in Gujarat and it's very populated, as with all cities in India. But recently, with the government that's come into place, it's seen a lot of investment. So there's been talk about a new high-speed train from Ahmedabad to New Delhi, which will sort of drive, you know, traffic to the state of Gujarat. So there is a lot of investment in the state, which I think is one of the reasons why real estate is also going up, because people now want to invest in properties that the government is investing in, or the state the government is investing in. So that's just my two bits on.
I'll take that. That's that one solved. What about Seattle? Let's put our feelers out for Seattle as well. What's the reason there? If you know the answer, text us on 4001. I mean, it's interesting reading these figures, but you just have to drive around this city. Here we are. We're looking out over a vista down here at Media City. But, you know, my drive home, we can see the number of cranes, the amount of property that's being built up here. My drive home, I go through entire new communities that have gone up over the last couple of years. What's the one down past the new Arabian Ranches, Town Square? You got Moudon down there. Then you go further on Town Square down towards the cycling track as well. And then there's something on the other side of that. There's all sorts of development. Who's renting these places? Who's staying in these places?
I think there are a lot of new people coming in. You know, so I think what has happened in Dubai is that a lot of new communities coming up, which is maybe why we're seeing this downward trend in property prices. But I think with the number of people coming in, maybe, you know, these newer communities will slowly start getting filled in as and when people start coming in.
Your thoughts on this one? How do you read the latest figures? Is it music to your ears, or does it cause you concern? Are you a renter out there in the market, or are you somebody who is renting? And have you seen a downturn in the last 12 months or so? Please do share your thoughts with us at the moment, 4001. If there's anything that you would like to air, then this is your opportunity to do so. As I said, text on 4001, or feel free to give us a call at any point during the show, 04871 5500. To the news desk we must go. When we come back, we'll have more stories from Surakshi and James, so make sure you stay with us here on The Agenda, live here on Dubai I-103.8.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai I-103.8.
Keep your thoughts coming to us on 4001. If you'd like to share your thoughts with us, we would appreciate your comments. Let's go to Surakshi, who has been kind enough to select a few stories that she'd like to talk about with us this morning. And it sort of leads on. We were talking there about rents and property prices here in Dubai and Abu Dhabi. One thing we can guarantee, Surakshi, is that Dubai continues to rank well in terms of popular destinations.
Dubai is definitely one of the most popular destinations when it comes to tourists visiting. And it's come third right after London and Paris, according to this new study by Expedia. So that's quite interesting. And this is out of the region that is Europe, Middle East and Africa. And it's beat the likes of Rome, Amsterdam and Barcelona to take the third spot, which I thought was quite interesting because those are traditionally cities that, you know, generate a high footfall of traffic no matter the tourist season or not. American tourists, surprisingly, have topped the list for inbound travel at almost 90% compared to last year. So American tourists are up compared to last year, and Russian tourists are back in Dubai again after the ruble has, you know, rebounded. And of course, India is still a very strong market, you know, with one of the highest overnight visitors to the region. So Dubai tourism is up from 2017 so far.
In terms of the reading of these figures, I know that you and I have discussed this in the past, and one of the problems for Dubai Tourism and all the other organizations that were involved was the fact that not enough people were leaving the airport. They were coming in, they were using Dubai airports, but specifically as a hub. So it on one hand, it had done that job that they'd set out and become a geographical hub, but enough people weren't exploring the city and further afield. Is that changing now?
I think for sure, because Dubai tourism has actually implemented a number of new procedures in place to sort of get people to go out. You know, so they've launched Dubai Pass, where if you show your Emirates Pass, you know, you get discounts at a number of attractions around the city. You can actually get visa on arrival for, you know, just stepping out for a few hours now, no matter where you're coming from, no matter what your nationality. As long as you have a U.S. visa that's valid, you can get a transit visa for the day, which is, I think, also generating a lot of traffic in terms of tourism leaving the airports.
Interesting as well, isn't it, James? I mean, you've been in the region for a while like me, and, you know, there were times when you almost didn't sort of mention American tourists here. You know, it was almost that sort of went under the radar. It was all a bit hush-hush and things like that, and you kept a low profile, etc. The fact that they're now topping the list for inbound travel seems to be a shift.
It certainly does, and it's surprising, to say the least. In a sense, given that Dubai is progressing so quickly in terms of tourism, the offering that we have, the variety of hotels, which is only going to get bigger more and more as we approach Expo 2020. We're going to talk about F&B later as well. We have some of the leading chefs from around the world coming here and open up their restaurants. Okay, we don't have a Michelin guide as such at the moment, but I'm sure that will be something that will come soon as well. So all the elements are there. Every single vertical of tourism is certainly here for Dubai. And the important thing now is that the messages are getting out there. So it's not just Europe or the rest of Asia. Messages are getting out to America now. I think with technology that we have, talking about flying taxis, those are worldwide stories that are getting picked up around the globe, which I think is helping to further expedite the message that we have here in Dubai, that we're here, there's tourism, it's a great place to come and visit.
Suraj, give me some insight, if you can, into these changes. You know, James and I were talking about our little staycations that we had separately, obviously, over the weekend. We didn't go away together, don't worry about that. One thing that I was interested in looking at was the percentages at the end, because that's been the one thing that's always got my goat. You know, you get to the end of it and you think you've got yourself a deal, and then you get presented with your final bill and you go, hang on, where did all that come from, etc. This has been addressed. Abu Dhabi have taken some drastic moves down there, and also we're seeing a redress here in Dubai. Is that having an impact at the moment from what you're hearing, and how are the hoteliers feeling about it?
I think everyone is a bit excited about this new municipality tax reductions that hotels in Dubai and Abu Dhabi will face, because it will bring down costs. But I think it's too new just yet, because it was only announced a month ago, to actually see the effects. But I think as the year goes on, we will see it, you know, from a consumer perspective, where our bill at the end of the day will be considerably lesser, because we'll be paying less municipality tax as it so goes. Mm. So I think we will see an effect, but not just yet, because it's too new to sort of calculate how much exactly we're benefiting from these new rules and laws. But I think it'll be considerable, considering, you know, even a 5% reduction in tax would be, you know, something that affects our bottom line.
It's going to be interesting, isn't it, James? Because I suppose the onus is now very much on the hoteliers and the brands, because, you know, they need to balance their books, and they're looking at the thinking, okay, hang on, I'm losing out here, so where can I make that up? And if we do see a significant increase in food and beverage or some other service that they supply, again, that's going to be a negative on the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. What I think what we have to look at is that there's no real argument. It can be quite expensive to stay here. Okay,
yeah.
During the summer, you can pick up a good deal, and that's why we went on our separate staycations.
But, just to reiterate that.
Yeah, just to reiterate. However, during the peak seasons, it is very expensive, and my parents love coming over from Scotland. They like to buy, but it can get quite pricey, particularly when you put the price of a hotel night stay, then going out for dinner, which, okay, more often than not, I'll pick up the cost, but it's still quite expensive. And to be able to maintain or come for a week-long holiday, you really need to have a fair bit of cash backing you. So I think it is important that the hoteliers look at what their pricing structure is. I understand it's not easy and books have to be balanced, but I think overall we really need to look at, or Dubai needs to look at, how it does that.
I think I couldn't agree with you more, but I think I'd go further. It's more than quite expensive. It is really expensive. And just, you know, little examples that I had, and I was looking at it from a tourist point of view. You know, we get used to it. We've become ingrained in it. You know, you get used to sort of picking up the costs at the weekend, et cetera, and treating yourself if you like. But, you know, I was looking at it from a tourist point of view this weekend, and imagine dipping into your mini bar in your room and taking a Coca-Cola out for 30 dirhams, not really understanding, you know, going, oh, well, it's a Coca-Cola, it won't be too much, 30 dirhams. And then working out that, it cost you
£6.
£6, yeah. $10, $12, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Wow, you know, for a Coca-Cola. And someone I was talking to in the hotel was talking about, you know, he was asking, where can I find the best onion rings in Dubai? It's a strange one, you know. It's funny, but you come all this way, and all you want is some onion rings. But this American guy we're chatting to, and he was saying, yeah, where do I get the best onion rings? He said, I just find it amazing, you know, that I'm paying $15 for a serving of onion rings. And he was from the southern states of America, where you could pick them up for literally next to nothing, etc. Yeah. But it, you know, once you do the comparison, once you work it out, mm-hmm. On a holiday budget per se, it's wow.
Yeah, you have to be in the know, certainly. I mean, there are bargains to be had, and a lot of restaurants will do a all-you-can-eat wings, for example, if we'll keep that theme going. There are places, yeah, a bucket of wings, and we'll retop it for 99 dirhams. So there are. But you have to be in the know. We're lucky that we live here. We pick up on these things and we know where to go. Or we use the entertainer, for example.
Yeah.
And I don't know anybody that, well, I do, but I think everybody will, if they're going out for something to eat or out on a Friday, you check entertainer and you see where the 2-for-1 dinners or brunches or whatever.
I mean, I think that's why it's important to also note that the mid-market industry in Dubai is seeing a massive rise because of all these costs. That makes it more affordable for people to actually come here and have a holiday, the mid-market hotels in the region. Mm. Or, you know, Emirates like Sharjah and Fujairah, Ras-Al Khaimah, really picking up on that, you know, tourism demand and sort of, you know, having more affordable prices for people where, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why the other Emirates are also getting a lot of traffic in terms of tourism, because, you know, sometimes people who can't afford maybe, you know, luxury prices in, say, Dubai could maybe afford it in Fujairah or Ras-Al Khaimah or even Sharjah.
Yeah. No, I sort of see that. I just, you've got to a point where, you know, people, I was talking to, again, somebody over the weekend. I've been doing a lot of talking over the weekend, you know, not much else to do. So, but it's interesting getting their insights as well. People checking into hotels and almost being afraid of going out from that hotel because they were on a full board or a half board deal or whatever. So you're right. They'd sort of budgeted accordingly. They'd be attracted over as part of their flight and their package. But there was that fear of going outside for fear that you're going to be spending over the odds. Mm. And I thought that was wrong, because you want people to explore the city as a whole.
Yeah, and speaking of package deals, the study from Expedia also shows that package demand has grown 40% this year compared to last year. So people are going for the package deal because that's what they want.
Mm-hmm. I'd be interested, and you mentioned the sort of 2-for-1 industry as well there, and Yeah, it's great for us as a consumer, and I think so many people use that as well. But it'd be interesting to hear from the hoteliers out there as well. I mean, have we got to a point now where the coupon industry, the two-for-one, is sort of is driving the supply and the demand for the hotel? It used to be the hotels open a restaurant, they give us the deal, we go to that. Now we're going to our coupons, our two-for-ones, to work out where we're going to go and eat.
Yeah, yeah, I personally think so. I think that makes it very difficult for hoteliers, but then you have to jump on that bandwagon, yeah, if you like. And if you're not in it, then you're not going to see the people coming through the door. Mm. I think we've probably all been to some place where they're doing two for one, and they tend to be very busy. Okay, you provide a good service, then you get the repeat business. I think that's the important thing. Okay, you do a two for one, but provide a great service, good food, good quality, and then you come back and perhaps you'll pay the full price. There's not an issue with that. The problem comes in when hotels do a two for one, the service isn't there, the quality of the food isn't good. They're losing out on that potential repeat business. So there is a balancing act, certainly. And it's just about finding that middle ground and doing it properly.
Sonal, are you a couponer?
I am, but I completely agree. I think it's totally driven up the prices here in Dubai. I think that whole, it's become such a huge thing. It's become almost like an expectation.
Mm. So that's an interesting one, yeah. So the prices, the price marks we're talking about at the moment, for hotels to make their marks, to meet their demands and their figures, they're having to drive prices up to combat the two for one.
I would think so. It seems to make sense to me, and I definitely have noticed prices going up recently in certain, you know, restaurants, certain areas, spas especially. I think they definitely need to drive up their prices a bit to make up for that.
Mm. Thoughts, please, text them through to us, 4001. We're going to ask Sarakshi for her 101 on VAT refund in just a few moments' time. James is going to be telling us about sudden swerving, so we've got plenty of stories to get through. If you'd like to share your thoughts or comments, encouraging you to do that now, please, on 4001.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
4001, thanks for your text messages. Keep them coming in if you would like to share your thoughts. So actually, I promised our listeners there your take on all things VAT and refunds. I mean, is that going to have an impact as well? Is that going to help drive more tourists here into the region?
I think it will bring the tourism standards up to international standards that already exist. And I think it will sort of complement the rising tourism factor. So the UAE cabinet has agreed to put in place a system that allows tourists to receive tax refunds on the 5% VAT that they pay on goods and services. But this will start in Q4 2018. Now, this allows tourists to reclaim their VAT. So this brings in sort of money into the system and the tourists sort of get something back as well. Mm. But it also brings Dubai and Abu Dhabi and the UAE in line with international tourism standards. Now, countries across the world, you know, give this VAT refund to their tourists. So from anywhere from, you know, 15% to 5% to 18% that Dublin offers its VAT refund. So I think it's interesting that there are all these, you know, regulations coming into play that will really build on the rising tourism levels to sort of complement it and go hand in hand.
Makes for interest. I mean, it's one thing that, you know, every time I come through Heathrow back here, I always, you know, kick myself for the fact that I haven't done it. But I tell you what puts me off, though, James, is the queues for the VAT refund desk. Whenever you go into that airport, there is a queue of anything from 50 to 100 people waiting to make their VAT refunds. And you just sort of think, you know, what time do you get to the airport? You must be at the airport six hours before your flight or something.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And I'm similar to you as well. I see that queue and just keep walking for all that I've perhaps not spent enough of that I could get VAT back on. But it's, I think overall, as Sir actually says, it's bringing Dubai, Abu Dhabi, UAE up to international standards, regulations in place, which can only be a good thing for the tourism industry here. Mm. It's an important thing to do. And it's great that the government's actually recognised that and put these measures into place. But yeah, as you say, it's a tough one. I've never done it. I've never got a refund. Perhaps I could have paid for my next holiday had I done so. But
17.5%.
You guys are missing out on some getting back your hard-earned money.
I know.
Why wouldn't you go through? It's a system in place for you to, you know, get back returns on whatever you've invested. And, you know, when you add it all up, it actually amounts to, so you go on a 10-day holiday, you know, and you've shopped, you know, the wife wants a new bag, the children want some new accessories, you know, you get yourself a nice new watch, you know, somewhere in Europe and stand in line. It amounts to a lot of money.
Is it only on goods bought?
A goods.
But like if you go to a restaurant, can you do it on that or not?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But different countries have different rules. So usually it's on goods bought, but some countries might allow it on, you know, certain purchases of food and beverage as well.
I can't take all my Tesco receipts in or something like that, no?
No, unfortunately not.
Yeah.
I think it'll make such a big difference here because we know people are coming here to shop. Like, this is a huge shopping hub, especially for people from South Asia that just come here to shop in bulk and go home. So I think here in particular, it'll actually make a huge difference. We know the gold market here especially is a big thing for the region. So I think, you know, those kind of key markets, it'll make a difference.
Mm. So any thoughts then? 4001, do you think it's going to make a difference? We've got about 5 minutes. Let's get another story in. James, to you. Let's stay in Dubai if we can. New report out, stats from Dubai Police showing what's causing the majority of fatalities on our roads. And the answer is...
Swerving, sudden swerving to be exact. For everyone that drives, I think it's a regular. You go out on the roads, particularly on Sheikhzayed Road, it can get a little bit hairy at times. Sirachi and I were driving to the studio today together and we were just saying it's one of the most nervous times of the day when you have to get into the car and head for a meeting, particularly if you're going down to the other end of town, down to Business Bay, financial centre. So, yeah, swerving is causing a lot of accidents. It's causing fatalities as well, I'm not sure the exact reason why people are continuing to do this, because Dubai Police have put in so many different campaigns to raise road safety awareness that I don't know why that it's not been taken on board, particularly when... Okay, not every day, but we talked about a crash on Sheikhzayed Roads earlier today. It is happening all too often. And the main reason for it is because people are swerving in and out across all the lanes. So there obviously needs to be more awareness done, but it becomes very difficult when there's so much time and money being invested into creating awareness campaigns. And we've seen them happening all around the world, but it's done well here, but clearly that message isn't getting across.
Why is that message not getting across? I suppose that's the question that a lot of people are asking. And I wonder whether, we were talking about this with the Business Breakfast crew just before we came on air this morning in the handover. And I wonder whether there is still this sort of element of confusion out there. I mean, do we drive on freeways or highways? What does that actually mean? Can you legally undertake on the roads here? I don't know if there needs to be a little bit more clarification in what you can and can't do. I mean, obviously, sudden swerving is ridiculous. Yeah. And if you're about to miss your turning on a major road, don't go across five lanes to get a crit because you're going to cause problems. Yeah. But at the same time, how often do you see that and people get away with it?
All too often. Yeah. And that's... perhaps one of the main issues. The police are very visible in Dubai. You see them on Sheikhzayed all the time. They're there. So I don't know if that's enough of a deterrent. I agree with you in terms of, okay, it's perhaps this expat culture that we talked about earlier. We've got so many different people, so many different expats from different countries that the driving conditions are perhaps different from each of these different countries. And is the understanding of the road network as good as somebody, I don't know, from the UK, as from mainland Europe? I don't know. I don't know the differences there. So there needs to be something done. Certainly.
The only reason I ask that, James, is because I'm reading into this report that you've picked up on there. And obviously they talk about sudden swerving as the main reason. They then go on to say that non-compliance with the compulsory lane for light vehicles was the second most, was the reason that caused the second most number of deaths. What compulsory lane for light vehicles? I didn't realize there was a compulsory lane for light vehicles. Now, maybe that's my bad, but I'm sure I'm not alone out there. Is there a compulsory lane for light vehicles? And if so, does everyone know about it?
That's why I don't drive, Tom.
Right, okay, yeah.
It's just.
Has anyone told the light vehicle drivers out there as well?
That's right. Yeah.
But and this is not, you know, this is not criticism per se. It's just, I suppose, that clarification of what the rules, the regulations, the laws on our highways and byways are out there at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason I say that, and it's all too easy for us to make comparisons with other parts of the world, but, you know, if you go and drive on a motorway in the United Kingdom, you know that there is a slow lane, there is a intermediate lane, and there is a fast lane. Mm-hmm. And if you try and undertake on any of those, you know you're going to get in trouble. Yeah. I just don't know whether that sort of message has got across to, as you said, the sort of melting pot, the cosmopolitan drivers that are from 290 different nationalities here in the UAE. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts, your answers, your solutions would be appreciated, please. What needs to be done about sudden swervers? How can we avert the swerving on our roads? You mentioned there about lack of concentration, mobile phones. We haven't mentioned that as well. Distraction in the roads, is that's what causing people to ignore their lane discipline? If you can share your thoughts and experiences, that would be appreciated. So them lines are open now, and we're encouraging you for you to have your say. James and Sirakshi, both in studio with us. You can also get in touch with the show. A number of means. You can give us a call, 0487 15500. Quick reminder of the text message number. It is 4001. And online at DubaiI1038FM. That's the handle. And the hashtag is DubaiI1038. Thank you to you all for your thoughts out there at the moment as we work through some of the big stories of the day. Let's get back to those stories now. Sunday morning paper review. James, I'm going to turn to you, if I may, to tell us about food outlets. I mean, there we are. We're talking about sort of the growth of the city in all its different guises. We've been talking about hotels. We've been talking about properties out there at the moment. The food and beverage industry, it just seems to be, it knows no bounds, does it?
It's incredible. It's incredible to think the number of hotels that are actually going to be coming online as we approach Expo 2020. And with each of those new hotels, the number of restaurants that's going to come with them. I think it's excellent. I think variety is fantastic. It's great to have so many different restaurants, so many different price ranges of restaurants. And we talked about Michelin-starred restaurants. Okay, we've not got the guide here at the moment, but we have some great restaurants in Dubai. It's a real treat to be able to go out for something to eat. However, my concern is that with 473 new food outlets opening in the first half of this year, how sustainable is that actually going to be? It's been something that's been discussed on this show, on the Business Breakfast, many times. What can we do to ensure that restaurants that are opening, people that are investing, have some longevity? All too often, we've seen restaurants opening, and 6 months later, they've had to close down. And that's some excellent restaurants, some world-renowned names that have actually shut down. So Sirakshi will probably have a better handle on this than me, given that I took this story from her website. It's amazing. How do we sustain the number of restaurants that are going to come on board as we get closer and closer to 2020?
I suppose what interests me about these figures and statistics, and we see these reports coming out quite often, and they are an eye-opener, and they always tell us about the outlets that are opening. There's never any statistics about those that are closing as well.
I think usually Dubai Municipality does come out and give figures on a yearly basis, so they do come out and say, but you know, it's not that bad. There was a study released by the Dubai Chamber of Commerce in 2017 last year, which said that, you know, 16,000 new restaurants open every year in Dubai, and out of that, you know, 5,000 close. But that's normal. I mean, look at the number of restaurants opening. You know, so it's not that number is not really that significant when you look at the bigger picture, really.
I suppose what is in those numbers, if you try and crunch those numbers, is the fact that we often see, and I've spoken to restaurateurs out there as well, they reckon they've got a 2-year lifespan per se because of the interest of Dubai. It's a very cyclical site in people, you know, certain projects are really hot for a moment and they become the place to go, and then focus changes to elsewhere. So if you make your name within 2 years and then you look to rebrand or something. So we're seeing those spaces being used again, but they're still owned by the same companies.
Yeah, for sure. I think when it comes to restaurants here, I think getting your message across right in the first time you open is obviously very important in terms of, you know, how many people you want to cater to, what your message is, what cuisine you're going to do, and have everything in place. And I think a lot of restaurants in Dubai do that. I mean, just look at the food delivery business here. It's booming. You know, you have Kareem saying that they want to now enter into food delivery. You have Uber that already does food delivery. You have Talabat. You have Zomato. So, I mean, you know, there is a need for us to have that many restaurants because people just also want more delivery options as well. So you have Deliveroo launching it, you know, a completely new kitchen that, you know, 16 restaurants right now serve out of, and they use that as a delivering base. So I think, you know, when you look at the bigger picture really of the food and beverage business in Dubai, that number is really not that significant. I mean, I think Dubai could do with a lot more restaurants.
Mm. More restaurants?
Consumers seem to really have gotten used to that feeling of having a hot new restaurant to go to every couple weeks. I think that consumers have really gotten used to that here, and it would feel strange almost if there wasn't a hot place to go to next week.
I just worry how sustainable that is. Introducing someplace hot every 2 weeks is incredibly difficult. And when you have established restaurants, and I'm sure amongst the four of us, we could name four or five that, yeah, they're our go-to brilliant restaurants. Mm. However, it's the new ones coming on. And for me, it's, again, going back to quality and being able to provide that quality. You open someplace hot, but is the quality there? And if it's not, they end up shutting down. How does that then impact on Dubai? We talked about tourism earlier. Does that have a negative impact that, okay, we're opening restaurants and people with enough money that can open them are opening them, but they don't know how to run them properly in this region, which is another major issue. People coming in from America or Europe, not understanding this region, trying to open a restaurant and not succeeding. I just have a certain worry of how that impacts on the way the world looks at Dubai.
I had an interesting chat with Gary Rhodes about this, and he was talking, and obviously he's, you know, been a great patron of restaurants here in the region, Dubai, but also down in Abu Dhabi and elsewhere. And he was talking about the sort of challenges that he faces as a sort of a known chef, a respected chef, a chef who could put his name on a door to attract people. But he said the biggest challenge for him was the fact that, you know, every time he put his name on a door here, people saw it as an anniversary restaurant, as he was the term he used. So, you know, he could guarantee them to come back every year for their wedding anniversary or a birthday or a special occasion. But he didn't want that. He wanted it to be more of a brasserie to come round, as you say, you know, that place that you go to for, because you can guarantee that you're going to get a good steak frites there to wherever. And that, I think, is the big issue here, is that how many places have that return customer week on week at the moment, because the mentality is not there. And that's what I think is also impacting prices.
Yeah, for sure. There are a number of marquee restaurants in Dubai that it's a treat to go to. I certainly can't afford to go to them every week and would love to, but can't. But then that goes back to your, perhaps the two for one, which we've touched on. Yeah. And okay, you then look at the two for one and you go to a nice restaurant, or you go to a restaurant because you like it and there's a two for one offer. So I think it's difficult. I just think it's tough. You need to know exactly what you're doing. You need to be good. You need to have good quality, and you need to provide a service that is representative of the price as well.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it on The Agenda with Tom Urquhart, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Right, we are. Get your thoughts into us. 4001. Sarakshi, over to you. You are going to explain to us something that we knew nothing about until about 2 minutes ago. Right, the piece is called Shakira in Lebanon, but that just tells half the story. Is that right?
Definitely. So I only found this out because I'm married to a half Mexican. So Shakira is in Lebanon, and she visited her paternal grandmother's village where, you know, she was born, and she traces her heritage back to Lebanon. Now she's there for an international festival and she's going to be performing later. But that's only half the story, like you said, Tom. A lot of Latin Americans and South Americans actually trace their heritage to Lebanon. So my husband traces, you know, one of his paternal grandfathers was actually from a tiny village in South Lebanon. And that's the case for actually a lot of Latin and South Americans.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, a lot of them have Lebanese-sounding names like Fayyad that has been, you know, turned into a Latin version. You know, and a lot of them have, you know, little cedar tree tattoos on them, and they feel very strongly about Lebanon. And I was just looking at the estimate, you know, Brazil has about 5.8 million people who could trace their heritage to Lebanon, Argentina, Colombia, Venezuela. So actually, it's not very well known, but it's an interesting fact about the region.
Is that why so many of our Lebanese residents were supporting Mexico, Argentina, Brazil at the World Cup this year?
Well, or maybe because they just play really good football.
Didn't make it through to the semis, though, did they? It's interesting, and I'd love to hear from listeners out there as well. Does that ring true with you? I'd be fascinated to find out more about the heritage and the links therein. But she's over there. She's just at a festival, is she?
Yeah, just for an international cedar tree festival, which is, you know, the national tree of Lebanon. And she's going to be performing later, and it's going to be, you know, a big little nice little concert with 13,000 people. But yeah,
Shakira, there she is over in Lebanon. Let's go to sports if we can, James. We're going to talk about more sports a little later on with Robbie Greenfield, but interesting initiative from Dubai Sports Council.
Yeah, I liked this one. I hadn't heard of it until I was reading about it yesterday. They're introducing something called the Dubai Sports Gate, which is basically going to be an interactive portal which will provide a guide to all sports events in Dubai. So that will involve events that you can go and watch. It will involve events that you can participate in. It will allow you to book tennis courts or football pitch, whatever it may be. It's going to be done online. There's also going to be a mobile app, as with everything nowadays. But for me, it just really highlights how far Dubai has come in terms of its sport and prowess, if you like. We regularly talk about golf events that are taking place here, attracting big tennis events. So for me, it's just an extension of how much Dubai is actually doing in terms of sport. And I think as a consumer myself of sporting goods or of going to the gym, it's great to see all of these either independent chain gyms being developed. You've got Dubai World Trade Center at the moment that is completely wide open to do so many different sports, that it's really encouraging. And it's nice to see some place really putting the emphasis on sport and keeping people fit.
Yeah.
We had a great initiative last year which really brought together so many people from Dubai. It's just good news, and it's just making things a lot easier to be able to get involved.
And I suppose it's also making that point, isn't it, that sport isn't just restricted to the cooler months here, that you can maintain your sports regime, albeit with a few changes year round.
100%, yeah. And it's great that we have those options. You look at other countries. I'm from Scotland. For a number of years, there was initiatives to try and encourage people to get involved in sports, but nothing quite as significant as this. And for me, that is just a great example of the Dubai government really pushing it. In Scotland, we didn't have the facilities necessarily. Obviously, during the winter, it gets a lot colder. It's not particularly pleasant to be outside. However, here, if it's summer, we've got great indoor facilities. And during the winter, it couldn't be better.
Your thoughts, please. 4001, have you found that you've taken up more sports since moving to the UAE? Has it piqued your interest and more? Talking of sport, we've got the small matter of the World Cup final a little later on. Now, I know that you're desperate to trot out a few stats for us on this one, Sir Akshay, because you've been looking forward to that. You've been over in Russia, you've seen a few games. Who are you supporting this evening?
Well, it's a bit tricky, but I think I'm going to go for France.
Okay.
Yeah.
These two met before in the...
So, surprisingly...
See what I'm doing,
yeah. Well, fun fact, Tom. Eastern Europe has not faced Western Europe in a World Cup final since the 1930s, when Hungary played Mussolini's Italy in the final. So that's interesting. So this will be the second time Eastern Europe is facing off against Western Europe.
Look at that. So you've been furnished with facts that you can dazzle the rest of the office with throughout the entire day. So come on, if you have to wear a French shirt or a Croatian shirt tonight, which one's it going to be?
I think France. It's also, you know, I've been trying to get my husband to take me to Paris for the longest time. So, and he promised me whichever team wins is the place we'll go to, you know, for our anniversary. So, yeah, I'm hoping France wins so he can finally make good on his promise.
It's the culmination of what has been a fascinating tournament. We've had drama, we've had VAR, we've had cards, yellows, reds and more. We've had new stars made, we've had all-stars having their reputation dented a little bit as well. It will be a tournament that is talked about for a long, long time, James, but it's one of the sort of bad sides, just leading into your final story, this whole, you know, the simulation that we're seeing on the pitches as well. I think that's one thing that has been a large part of the conversation. There's a great little sort of video doing the rounds at the moment of a load of kids training on a field somewhere in the world, and they're running across the pitch. They're, you know, 6, 7 years old or whatever. And then you hear their coach blow the whistle and shout, Neymar, at which point they all fall on the ground as one and start riling around in agony as if they've been shot by a sniper's bullet or something like that. That's the bad side of the game, isn't it?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. It's a bad side. And given that we have so much VAR, that there is a camera on everybody at every point of the game, at every single angle, for me, it just blows my mind that somebody thinks that they can get away with doing that. It's just incredible. Mm. However, that does lead nicely onto one of my last stories, and that is footballers who actually feign injury on the pitch are using the same techniques as what cavemen used to use before they could actually speak. So basically what has happened is that the squeals, if you like, that Neymar has become famed for to trick the referee into giving a free kick were actually something that was developed by cavemen. They would feign, or they would make noises in distress to gain the support of the family members. Or it was basically a survival method that they developed. So they would squeal, they would make noises, they would pretend that they were injured. And apparently this was a survival technique, which, it would appear, Neymar has really incorporated into his game, and I dare say he has won a few free kicks and got the sympathy of the referee.
I'm sure there's a bit of truth in that, because every time he goes down, the referee is surrounded by yellow shirts, isn't it? As his family come together to protect him from great aggressors leering over him, trying to drag him back onto his feet. I like it. You were shaking your head, though.
Well, I genuinely think Neymar does it for, you know, he's such an internationally well-known superstar and so talented. I just, you know, it shocks me that he resorts to that level to get free kicks.
It's interesting, though. I mean, you know, we've been talking, Neymar didn't go as deep into the tournament as he and Brazilian fans would have liked. Has he sort of dented his reputation a little bit because of his antics? Remains to be seen. But it certainly looks like one player who hasn't always seen eye to eye with him, but is a teammate of his over in France, who is in the final, Kylian Mbappe. He, again, obviously burst onto the scene, has been one of the poster kids of this tournament, has a huge future, just 19 years old. But he's also been booked for simulation a couple of times in this tournament, and he is one to go down fairly easily.
But, you know, I read somewhere that one of the reasons why, you know, their reactions are so violent as such after they have even the tiniest bit of skirmishes is because, you know, back in the days before VAR, they were moving so fast at such quick speeds, and, you know, there was no way to really tell that they had been fouled or injured. So that's one of the defenses I read online, you know. And so, you know, they had to do these over-the-top little, like, spins and to sort of get the attention that, hey, I've been fouled. So, okay. Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay. the jury's out on that one, I'm afraid. But we will put it to the sports team just after the 12:30 news. Our time is up on this occasion. Sir Akshay, it's been lovely as always. If people want to get in touch with you and your team, best way for them to do that is?
You can check us out at hoteliermiddleeast.com, or you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. It's just hoteliermme.
And James, always a pleasure. Thanks very much indeed for your time this morning. If people are interested in sharing their opinions with you and your team?
Yep, they can go to our website, shamalcoms.com, or likewise, they can follow us on Instagram or Facebook at shamalcoms.
Up next, we talk sport with Robbie Greenfield. Our thanks to our paper reviewers. Enjoy. Oh, we didn't get predictions, did we? Who's going to win the World Cup? Sir Akshay?
France.
James?
Croatia, just so Sir Akshay can go to Croatia.
We meet next week to compare notes. Thank you very much indeed for that one. Who do you think is going to win and why? Text me now, 4001.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Right, we are. We move on to the final half hour of the show, and we take a look at all things sport. There's only one place to start, and is of course the World Cup. Belgian boss Roberto Martinez says the strength of their team has been on show throughout the FIFA World Cup. They became the third place nation at the tournament with a 2-0 win over England in St. Petersburg last night. Martinez says there's a lot of good things about this group of players.
We've been a team. We suffered together. We had emotions. And I think we played football that the neutral fan of the World Cup really enjoyed. So that's my proudest feeling out of this work.
Did the neutral fan enjoy? Well, let's ask an England fan. Robbie Greenfield joins us live on the line. Robbie, you watched this game with myself and Chris McCarty last night. Have they entertained us this year?
Oh, I'd say so, Tom. It's better than getting knocked out by Iceland in the round of 16 in the European Championships, isn't it, at the end of the day? And in the last World Cup, England were booted out in the group stages. So it's definite progress. But I think yesterday was another illustration of the work that England still have to do to catch up to some of the really true quality sides that were on display over in Russia. And you've got to say Belgium were one of those. I fancied them to beat France in the semi-final. I thought they were poor against France. They were just a little bit lacking in creativity, and France were excellent defensively and good on the counter-attack. But yesterday it was the Belgians that were the ones that were counter-attacking, and basically two counter-attacking goals were enough to finish off England. Thomas Meunier, Eden Hazard, more on him in a moment because he's been talking about his immediate club future, and it's going to worry a few Chelsea fans, I think. But full credit to Belgium. They were excellent this World Cup, well worth finishing third. And they'll look back on it and think, if we hadn't won the group that we were in with England, we might well have made the final, because I think they might have beaten Croatia in that semi-final. Those are ifs and buts, though. The fact is they've come third. And we're looking ahead to what promises to be an absorbing final this evening. France taking on Croatia.
Let's talk Eden Hazard if we can. We were talking Chelsea yesterday, you, myself and Chris McCarty on the grill live from Barasti. And obviously lots of movements down at Chelsea at the moment. Their manager has gone in the last 48 hours. A new manager has been brought in. He's already made his first signing. Worrying times, though, for Eden Hazard fans. And he is a player who's lit up this World Cup over the last couple of weeks.
He certainly is. Yeah, he's one of the best players in this World Cup. He's been excellent. He tried to do a little bit too much in that semi-final, I thought, against France. But aside from that, he's been fantastic. He really has. And he will be a huge loss. He has come out effectively, Tom, and said, I want to leave Chelsea. He says, I think you all know my preferred destination. I think we all do. I think that destination is Real Madrid. And he will hope that Chelsea sanction that transfer. Now, what usually happens in these situations is that when Real Madrid come calling and the player puts on pressure and the agent puts on pressure and the club are then backed into a corner to try and get what they can for a player who will then threaten to basically run his contract down and leave for free when that ends. So Chelsea might think that at this time, having had Eden Hazard on the books for 6 years, it is an opportunity to cash in for him. Could probably get 100 million, maybe even more than that, for Eden Hazard. So I think Chelsea will probably be bullied into selling their star player. And when you think about how integral he's been in the title-winning campaigns of the year before the last season and then 2015 under Jose Mourinho as well, it will be a huge void for Maurizio Sarri, the new manager, to fill. And given how he likes to play his football, a much more creative, a much more stylistic way of playing football than Antonio Conte, his predecessor, it's going to present some interesting problems, because Eden Hazard is that player, but I think it's inevitable that he will be off to Real Madrid this summer.
So, Belgium finish third. England, who are finally going home, finish fourth. And we turn our attention to this evening's final. France taking on Croatia. France and Manchester United midfielder, the Pog, Paul Pogba. He wants to add another star to the national team shirt by winning today's World Cup final. The 98 winners take on Croatia. It would be England in the last four. France favourites, like they were in the Euro 2016 final, which they lost to Portugal. Pogba doesn't want a repeat performance.
My holidays after the Euro 2016 final were not good at all. I still have not fully digested it. Now, I know the taste of a defeat in a final, and it is not good. It is very bitter. We will not approach this final the same way as we did in the Euros.
He divides opinions amongst Manchester United fans. I think everyone will agree, though, he's had a wonderful World Cup for France.
He certainly has. Yeah, he's looked excellent. He really has. I think together with Matuidi and Kante in that midfield, that's just those are the perfect teammates and the perfect foils for Paul Pogba to do what he does best. He's looked good from an attacking perspective. He's linked up well with the forwards, Antoine Griezmann and Kylian Mbappe and Olivier Giroud as well. And he's looked very dynamic. He's been great at winning the ball in tough situations, the 50-50s. All the criticism that you level at him when he plays for Manchester United, that sometimes he floats through games, he doesn't look particularly interested. It's been the absolute opposite. Jose Mourinho will be watching this World Cup and scratching his head thinking, where's that player that I signed who should be doing this week in, week out for Manchester United? He's been fantastic. And, you know, it's difficult to look past France. You made the point yesterday that this has been the World Cup of shocks, and we shouldn't underestimate Croatia's ability to spring another one. A country of 4.1 million. It is quite exceptional that they've made the World Cup final at this stage. They're the 13th nation to make a World Cup final, but France have been down this road before. Not with this group of players. A lot of them experienced the European Championship final, but they won in 1998. They were back in the final in 2006, and they're a nation that is used to going very far in World Cups, and I think that will stand them ultimately in good stead. When you couple that with how good they've looked defensively, Raphael Varane and Samuel Umtiti have been absolute rocks in the heart of defence. Hugo Lloris has had a fine tournament in goal. France have been excellent, and they've grown into the tournament. Whereas with Croatia, they've been taken to extra time all three matches in the knockout rounds against Denmark, against Russia, and against England. And that may catch up to them in the Luzhniki Stadium when it will just be impossible for them to control their emotions, I would imagine, given how important and how prestigious this event is. And they're making history for their country. But listen, I'd love to see them win. I still favour France.
Let's hear now from Ivan Rakitic, who says they've got their work cut out in today's World Cup final. He makes point that the French opponents, the French squad, is a squad full of talent.
They really deserve to play the final. They're a serious team.
How then do Croatia break down this French team? If France are going to start as the favourites, that's not going to be a problem for Croatia, because I suppose they've played the underdog role throughout the entire tournament.
Yeah, in the group stages, I think a lot of footballing observers would have fancied them to beat Argentina. That was billed as a shock, but I think the manner in which they did it was the shocking part. I don't think beating Argentina was necessarily so shocking. It was the fact they did it 3-0 in the group stages. And as soon as they did that, they earmarked themselves as maybe not a contender for the title of the World Cup champions, but certainly a team to watch and one that might go far in this tournament. And then, just like with England, really, the draw fell kindly for them. They fell into that bottom half of the draw. Spain were knocked out. So they had to play Denmark, who were an ordinary team, in all honesty. Russia, who were inspired as the host nation, but a team with its own limitations, and then England, and we've spoken a lot about the limitations that England possess, and Croatia, no doubt about it, were the better side when they met England in the semi-finals. So I think to beat France, they're going to have to play the match of their lives. Luka Modric will have to really be on song. Now, he has been on song this tournament, so I think if he can repeat some of the performances that he's put in earlier on in the tournament, that stands them in good stead. The likes of Mario Mandzukic must take his chances when they arrive to him, because France have an excellent defence. They might not get too many chances in this match, and they're going to have to be clinical in front of goal. And Dejan Lovren has billed himself as the best defender on the planet. I wonder how he's going to fare against 19-year-old Kylian Mbappe in the final. He certainly brought a little extra pressure onto himself by saying that. But look, I mean, never underestimate Croatia. I think it will be an interesting game because I think Croatia will probably have more of the ball and France will look to be that sort of very aggressive and clinical and fast-paced counter-attacking side that is also resolute defensively. So that will probably be the pattern of the match. The question is, can Croatia unpick the lock? I'm not so sure.
Fascinating game a little later on. Rather conveniently, FIFA have listened to Chris McCarthy and Robbie Greenfield, and they've decided to move the kickoff time to 7 o'clock local time here in the UAE, just so that it joins with your broadcast a little later on. So that's nice of them.
Certainly is, yeah. No, we did send them an email a few months ago just to say, listen, guys, if you could, that would be much obliged. And they have reneged, or at least they've accommodated our request. So the World Cup final is at 7. If you can't get in front of a TV, I do appreciate that most people will want to watch this event, but if you cannot get in front of a TV, if you're out and about for whatever reason, pop on Dubai 103.8, and Chris and I will be commentating kick by kick all the way through live coverage, and we'll stay with it even if it goes to extra time and beyond our show running of 9 o'clock, because it's rather important, isn't it? And we want to know who wins the championship. So, yeah, we're going to commentate live on the final. That one gets underway at 7 p.m. this evening, Tom.
That's what's happening in the FIFA World Cup final. 7 o'clock kickoff this evening. Chris, Robbie and the team will be down there at Bridgewater Tavern for one final night, one final hurrah at the JW Marriott Marquis. Right, so that leaves us 90 seconds to get through all the other sport in the whole of the world. No, we've got a little longer than that. Let's run the line there on a few of these stories. We have got a new champion in the women's division over at Wimbledon.
We certainly do. Angelique Kerber, she is the champion. She beat Serena Williams, the big favourite. Serena going for her 8th Wimbledon title. It was a rerun of the 2016 Wimbledon title that Serena Williams won. This time around, it was the 11th seed, the German. Angelique Kerber, who won 6-3, 6-3, Tom. That is her third Grand Slam title success. How did she do it? She was simply more nimble. She was better equipped to deal with the strains and the strenuous sort of demands of a final. And Serena Williams looked out of ideas for most of the match. She didn't look like she was moving particularly well. Angelique Kerber's court coverage was fantastic. Her consistency was excellent. And she enjoyed the fact that Serena Williams was hitting to her with a lot of power. She was able to counter. She was able to use Serena Williams' power against her, if you like. And in the end, run out a pretty comfortable winner, 6-3, 6-3. The 30-year-old German. She's having a real renaissance, a real sort of Indian summer of her career. 3 Grand Slams now. She could get back to world number one. I think she's put that disappointing 2017 behind her. So great news for Kerber and all fans of her. Serena Williams, on the other hand, well, she spoke about just being delighted to reach a final after all she's been through, after coming back, making that big comeback earlier on in the year, not playing too many matches, having to pull out of the French Open at Roland Garros due to a shoulder injury, and all the complications she had with the birth of her child and the surgeries that followed that. I think ultimately to reach a Wimbledon final is sensational. We expect so much of her. She is a superhero in many ways. But this was one bridge too far, and congratulations to Angelique Kerber.
We'll hear from Angie Kerber in just a few moments' time. New name, therefore, on the women's trophy. Will there be a new name on the men's trophy, or is it an old war horse returning to centre court and Wimbledon glory a little later on?
I don't want to get too presumptuous because Kevin Anderson, who is in the final, did beat Roger Federer in the quarterfinals. He did outlast John Isner in that ridiculous match, 26-24, in the fifth set. In the semi-finals, but he's up against a man who is possessed with the love of tennis again. Novak Djokovic has made his comeback. I think we can safely say Djokovic is back. Having been in the doldrums for so long now, struggling with injuries, struggling with personal issues, struggling with even trying to get psych himself up, he's relied so much, Djokovic, on that warrior spirit, and I think that was lacking in the last 18 months, having accomplished so much in the men's game. He's got his hunger back, and given the fact that he beat Rafa Nadal in one of the all-time classic Wimbledon matches in that semi-final, 10-8 in the fifth, yes, he won't have too much recovery time, but you've got to back Djokovic, the master at return of serve. Anderson's weapon is his serve. When you get him into an all-court rally, Djokovic all day long will dominate from the back of the court. And if Djokovic can put a few good returns in, I just don't see how Anderson beats him today, given the form that he's on. I could be wrong, I often am, but for me, it's Novak Djokovic for the 4th Wimbledon title.
Going to have to be a split screen for the Sports Tonight boys and, of course, for sports fans out there, because men's final are underway at exactly the same time as the FIFA World Cup final. So some good scheduling there from our various sporting entities. In fact, you will have the men's final kicking off just a little bit earlier, at 5 o'clock, I'm told, by Schroots here in studio. So that gets underway at 5 o'clock. And then the Football World Cup at 7 o'clock. So you have a bit of lead into that one. Right, we literally have run out of time. Just one final quick one. England hitting back yesterday to beat India. That levels up the series and makes for a nice decider.
Certainly does. Joe Root, what an amazing knock he put in. 113 with the bats, but he was ably assisted by the likes of Jason Roy with 40. Johnny Bairstow made 38. Owen Morgan, the captain, he was 53. And what about David Wyatt-Willey? 50 as well for him. So England back into form after basically being put to the sword by Kuldeep Yadav in the opening opening ODI in this series. That's 1-1, Tom. India to regroup. It's been two one-sided games thus far. I wonder who's going to take the third.
Robbie Greenfield, bless you. Thanks very much indeed. That's Robbie Greenfield of our sports team bringing us up to date. If you want to catch up with Robbie and Chris, they're live down at the Bridgewater Tavern this evening for the World Cup final. If you can't make it down there, lock it in here on Dubai Eyewinner 3.8 for their commentary of the game. Let's hear from the England captain, Owen Morgan, who was very proud of his team's victory against India at Lord's yesterday.
Our all-round performance really did contribute to that win. Obviously, Joe set things up, but Dave at the end played a crucial knock. The two boys up front were excellent as well. And then an all-round bowling performance, I thought, was key.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Right, just a few things to wrap up before we hand over to Helen Farmer and Dubai today. What about this one, courtesy of all our friends at Jumeirah? They are doing the jumeirah.com/90ways. That's jumeirah.com/90ways. 90 ways to spend the summer, from relaxing and enlightening staycations, exclusive dining and great adventures abroad. And in fact, that's one of the deals we'd like to bring to your attention today. You're going to London at any point over the summer? If you are, then make sure you make your way down to the Ribram for a great Sunday roast. You can't go to London without trying the Ribram's traditional Sunday lunch. Begin with a classic prawn cocktail, then savour a succulent signature roast rib of beef sourced from the royal warrant holder Donald Russell, supplier of Her Majesty the Queen, finished with a range of rich desserts. And if you have space, you can squeeze in some petit four with tea or coffee. £60 per person every Sunday, 12:30 to 3 o'clock, Jumeirah Carlton Tower, London.
Get involved and help set the agenda. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
That's about it from us this morning. We mentioned the fact that Angelique Kerber has been crowned the champion of Wimbledon. Well done to her yesterday. She overcame resurgent Serena Williams in the final.
It's just amazing. I cannot describe this feeling, because when I was a kid, I was always dreaming for this moment, and to win Wimbledon, it's something really special in my career.
So well done to Angelique Kerber, Angie winning the women's title. Who's going to win the men's title? One person who'll be watching on with interest is, of course, our producer, Schroots, who's in studio with us now. Djokovic for you all the way?
Yes, definitely.
Can Anderson beat him?
I think so. I mean, he played really, really well against Isner. And also, he had that one day rest that Djokovic unfortunately couldn't, because, you know, his match had to be moved because Isner Anderson went on forever. So I guess that will be an advantage for him, the recovery.
Is tennis a better place to have him back playing at the top of his game?
Is the
game of tennis a better place to have him back playing at the top of his game? Because he slipped down the rankings, he's had appalling form in recent years.
I would think so. I know a lot of people say, oh, move on Federer, move on Nadal. Yeah. I feel like I do enjoy watching the top five, the original top five play, Murray included. I feel like they have a different game, a different charisma. The young boys are coming up, but they have a long way to go to get that sort of focus, to get that sort of charm and charisma. I think they have a long way to go for that.
Djoko's back almost his best, and he believes it's been a long, old road to get there.
Speaking from this position right now makes it even better for me, makes it even more special, because I managed to, you know, overcome challenges and obstacles and get myself to the finals of a slam. Obviously, if you told me that 6 months ago, I would take it right away.
Just to confirm then, as you were saying a little earlier, 5 o'clock start for that one?
It is.
Okay, so the men's final gets underway at 5 o'clock this afternoon. A quick word for Manny Pacquiao. Well done to you, Manny. Still man enough to put a man down on his back. Dominant display as he stopped Lucas Matisse in the 7th round to claim the WBA welterweight title from the Argentine last night. Pacquiao dropping Matisse in the 3rd and 5th rounds before the referee stopped it after he sent him to the canvas for a third time in the 7th. 39 years old, 60th win of his career.
Wow.
Congratulations. There's still life in him yet, that's for sure. So that was Manny Pacquiao last night. And Tour de France, well done to Dylan Groenewegen, who won his 2nd Tour de France stage in as many days with another powerful sprint in Amiens yesterday. That was stage 8 with back-to-back wins for he. That's about it from us today. Huge thanks to you, Shrutes, for putting this one together. That was a Sunday morning agenda. Thank you for everything.
Thank you.
To you, Sonal, bless you. Thanks so much indeed. Couldn't have done it without you. Bless you.
Thanks.
Thanks very much. Did Melanie do anything today or not?
Yeah, she did. She made a phone call.
Melanie does everything.
Yeah.
She made a call home. Okay, fine. So she called home. Anyway, thanks, Melanie, for being you. That's Melanie, our tech op. Keeping us on air throughout. We're back tomorrow with another talker from 10 till then to run.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.